That's our intro.
Hello everyone and welcome to Bioscope Brasa. This is a show with two Brasa talk movie news, reviews, shorts, and some cock in between. My name is Ross.
I'm Jody.
This week we're reviewing a Jennifer Lawrence comedy and a Latino superhero film.
Yo, no DCU creator.
DC is also involved.
They need all the creators.
Back once again with another banger.
Yo, that's high hope, sir.
Yeah, that is high hope.
Why do I don't need that pressure?
Why?
I don't need that pressure on
don't
me.
Don't you do well under pressure?
No.
Hey?
No.
Do you crumble?
Yeah, that song of Bowie and Douglas is like the antithesis of my life.
Under pressure constantly. But pressure makes diamonds, Jody.
True, I'm not the diamond. No. I don't start as gold.
The thing is, diamonds is a scam.
They're not forever.
The beers fooled everyone. Let's get into the news.
Our news and shorts.
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Van Damme.
Vendon. So, yeah, these things come out. You know, people always do retrospectives and shit.
Yeah.
And they talk about Jean-Claude Van Damme in this story, specifically on the set of Street Fighter.
Yeah.
Quote, basically out of control.
I think that you get a lot of this stuff now because people do, like, interviews.
Yeah.
There's podcasts and there's red carpets and there's, like, there's so much content needed that now all this cuck starts coming out, man.
It's true because I've been seeing stories about how boys to men are terrible to work with. Have you seen that?
That is on my bloody For You page everywhere. And I bought tickets to the concert. I refuse to watch that now, stuff.
Apparently, there are a bunch of niggas to work with.
The baby faces.
Yeah,
everyone.
Anyway.
So the guy that played Vega, Jay Tavare, he did an interview recently. He's like, and he's spoken to Jean-Claude Van Damme about this. So they are apparently cool. But he says, Jean-Claude Van Damme was basically coked out of his mind on the set of Street Fighter. Now you contrast that with Raul Julia, who's like doing the most as Bison.
Shame. Right? And he only took that role for his children.
For his kids.
Yeah.
He was trying.
They
said Jean-Claude Van Damme was coming in every day. You didn't know if the man actually was just coming in, he was there the whole night, or if he came in from like his apartment, or if he was clubbing or whatever. But he was coked
up. Him and Mickey Rourke.
Yeah.
They were big brasa, apparently.
Oh.
No, but before fucking I knew about the story, I actually watched this YouTube little short documentary about him and how he came up and stuff. Mm. And it was really hard for him to actually break through. It's insane the amount of work that he did.
Jenna and I found this old movie on TV one day where he was the villain.
Yes.
And it's clearly before like any of his other stuff.
Yes.
I was
so
shocked.
So they, even in that documentary, they list movies that I haven't seen of his.
Yes.
The one where he was a villain, that was also part of his breakout, and he was apparently also he's been difficult to work with all the time.
His whole life.
Because he had his own vision of certain things. He wanted to push his career in a certain way. A lot of the time, because the studios tried to bury... What is his first movie?
The Kickboxer.
Bloodsport. Bloodsport. Sorry, I'm talking about Bloodsport now. They tried to bury that film. They weren't going to release it.
Why?
Because they felt it wasn't good. And then he did another film and he actually convinced them to release it if he did an edit.
Oh.
So he fucking edited that movie to be what it was.
Yo.
Yeah, bruh.
I
like,
had no idea.
No, the amount of work this bruh put in his own career is insane. Like screenwriting.
Mm. Mm.
He fucking wrote so many scripts and stuff and helped with so many scripts of his own films.
And he's a legit martial artist as
well. Because he was bullied for ballet.
Yeah. And but he actually had a career in like kickboxing and stuff.
Yeah. He was like a fucking undisputed champion in karate and shit for a while.
And him and Steven Seagal was at.
Yeah, bro. Fucking Steve, you will moor. Like, if they must fight now, you will fuck Steven Seagal up 100%.
But if Steven Seagal falls on you,
no, then you're dead.
Then you're dead.
Yeah.
Hey, bud, I'm the best.
Anywho.
So, Steven Seagal is a whole nother episode. That's all. We need to dedicate a whole episode.
If we ever do movie
Cook
again, we must do an entire Steven Seagal retrospective.
I need a month for research.
Start off with Under Siege, just go all the way through to like the 2020s.
But this makes 100% sense. He had a big drug problem. He's been upfront about
And he said like in that time he was spending about 10,000 a week on cocaine. Not even a variety of things. Just cocaine.
Cocaine is a hell of a drug.
It's a hell of a drug.
And for him to keep that physical appearance through all this abuse is also like fucking crazy.
I mean, Brad, think of the movies that came out during that time. There's like this Double Impact, Universal Soldier, Nowhere to Run, Hard Target.
Yeah.
Like iconic action movies.
I went to go watch The Quest with my father.
Quest.
The Quest, man, bro.
That was like what, mid-90s?
Bro. Yeah, that was his PG movie though.
Yeah, that came out like after AWOL.
Yeah. So, yeah, I do have empathy for him, though. He holds a special place in my action fan heart. But he was a troubled gentleman.
He was, and he's owned it. And even here, like, the guy talking about it says they're friends now. Like, it was hard during that time, but they've come to a space where they can reflect on it.
The fucking thing is that, like, me, my cousin and I, we used to watch Double Impact quite a lot. And there was this one.
It was two of them.
It's the stupid scene where he's delivering dialogue and he's explaining because he plays the twin that was like away, it had a bad life, basically. Yeah. And he comes back and he's like, "Where were you when I was out on the street? Nobody helped me." And me and my cousin used to fucking the whole time be like, "Nobody helped me." For no reason. When you have to wash the dishes alone, "Nobody helped me." I was like, wow, that's my best John McGann memory. Anyway, now fuck JCVD, bring him back. Leslie Jones of SNL fame.
Yeah,
she had a memoir come out.
Leslie fucking Jones.
Is that the name of the memoir?
Yeah. That's the name.
Dope. But in there, she... Oh, it is Leslie fucking Jones.
Yeah.
Thought you were talking cack.
No.
Nice. In there, she comments about Jason Reitman's comments about the Ghostbusters.
Yeah, so the female-led Ghostbusters came out in the, what was that, mid-2010s, right? Very divisive film. Like, there was a huge uproar. The nerds hated it because we want the original cast.
Yeah, we want white men.
So...
And one black man.
Yeah, who can... He must know his place.
Yeah.
He's just happy to be there. Winston... So when Jason Reitman came to the franchise and did Afterlife, one of the statements he made is that I'm bringing it back to the fans. And Leslie Jones has called him out on it because she's like, you are endorsing all of that sexist, racist bullshit that came out when our film came out.
Yo, and she got honest, she got racist by stuff. Eh?
Like, to be honest, I know that movie isn't liked by everyone, but I enjoy it. Like, when it's on TV, I'll watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a horrible movie. There wasn't, it's not that bad. It had its issues, but also, they were trying something new to reach a new audience.
I honestly think it's a fun movie. I've watched it many times.
Well, I have my issues.
Just like, there's issues.
But it has nothing to do with it being female-led. Mm. It has nothing to do with casting diversity. It has nothing to do with that. My issues are with the script and some decisions that were made and some of the CGI stuff.
Yeah.
But that's it.
Yeah.
So valid points, we'll take.
Yeah.
But cuck, futsack.
Yeah. Sexist, racist, bullshit, fuck off. And I agree with her that the way that he framed it is like, bringing it back to the fans? That sounds like you are endorsing that toxic fandom.
Yeah.
That you were like, you guys were right. We need a bunch of, we need those white old middle-aged men to get back here.
Yeah.
With one guy as the little whatever. Bullshit, man.
Yeah, it's bullshit. But again, like, it's that old generation that are just saying things without thinking. And they are products of their time. And they'll die sooner than us.
The one line, because apparently Jason made his statements on the Bill Burr podcast. And he says, "I'm not making the Juno of Ghostbusters movies."
Wow.
What about this movie, Scream Juno?
Yes. The fuck does that mean, though?
And look, I enjoyed Afterlife. I thought it was...
No, Afterlife is cool.
Like,
yeah.
It did nostalgia, right? But fuck him, man. If, like, making statements like that...
Oh, yeah.
No, just no.
Sec, it's time for a review.
This week's first movie is called No Hard Feelings, directed by Gene Stupnitsky, who I think we all know from The Office and Parks and Rec and a few other series and stuff.
No.
Yeah.
I need to see your face.
I don't know his face. I'm just saying what he's done work on.
Oh, so why would people know that?
Because his name always used to pop up. In
sure,
the
pal. Sure. Okay, people okay. are reading credits.
He was involved in one of our favorite shows from last year, or this year, Jury Duty as well. Anywho. So, on the brink of losing a childhood home, a desperate woman agrees to date a wealthy couple's introverted and awkward 19-year-old son. However, he proves to be more of a challenge than she expected, and time is running out before she loses it all. This movie stars Jennifer Lawrence, Andrew Bothfeldman, Laura Benanti, Matthew Broderick, Natalie Morales, Scott MacArthur, Eben Moss-Backrack has a tiny role, but shout out cousin.
Sorry, what?
Eben Moss-Backrack.
Backrack?
Yeah. Backrack.
Oh, cousin. Like Backrack, like your mom.
Cousin.
I didn't know his name, no.
Oh, Eben Moss.
He's cousin to me now forever.
Yeah. He has a small role in this film.
I like him though, eh?
Love cousin. Just
watching cousins come up.
Ah.
Anyway.
Cool. So that's the main. Yeah. That's the main mains.
Yeah. I haven't seen Jennifer Lawrence in a long time.
Mm.
Right? What was the last thing we saw in?
She did that film Joy not so long ago where she played the person who came up with like Kirby or something like that, the vacuum cleaner thing.
I don't think I watched it.
I didn't watch it either. But,
oh.
No, I'm saying stuff she was in.
Yeah.
She was in
Red Sparrow.
What else was she in?
Mother.
American Hustle. 2013.
Yeah, but that's too long ago.
Mother, I think you're right. That was probably one of the more recent ones, yeah.
But
Mother and Joy.
Yeah, I mean, she came, shame. Her career has also been like weird. She's a really great actress, but I think like the oversaturation of her in the public eye, people were getting tired of her and being like, oh, I'm so relatable and stuff. And people were like,
ugh. She was with Brian Tyree Henry in Causeway.
Yeah.
And Don't Look Up, obviously, with Leo.
Yeah. Okay, so those are most recent ones. But still, it doesn't seem like she... But again, they saturated her so much that it's like you were seeing her everywhere and then you just didn't see her anymore.
And there's like a specific version of her that was being
kind
of portrayed in those movies. Kind of like high-strung and shouty. And did you watch a Hot Wings episode?
Hot Ones, yes.
Hot Ones. Like, she's so different from the characters that she plays.
Yeah.
And I think that that oversaturation and that specific version of her probably made people bejimuch.
No, definitely. But she took a break, became a mother.
Mm.
Like family cuck and stuff. And I think she's moving into production and stuff like that. So she's doing things. But this one was actually quite refreshing. I mean, she is known for a lot of drama shit and some action if she's in blue paint.
Yeah.
And
Hunger Games.
Yeah. I mean, that launched her.
Yeah.
So it was refreshing to see her do an R-rated comedy where she plays this fucking... like a deadbeat woman, shame.
She's complete.
She's not a deadbeat, but I mean, like, she's not a good person in any measure.
But also, almost like maybe slight misrepresentation of what the movie is when they pushed it as this, like, almost something that was like Eurotrip. The marketing made me think of American Pie, Road Trip, those types
really
of movies.
I didn't get that, Nochal.
I don't know. That was the sense I got from the marketing.
Okay.
And it's not that.
Okay. But it's his perspective, love.
Let him. Perspective
You know, I get abused at home and then I come here. This is supposed to be a safe space.
Well, Jenna actually requested
Did
that we abuse
her. Just be consistent in the abuse.
No, you're okay. That's interesting because I didn't get that.
I'm lumping a bunch of movies.
You are,
thing,
you
but,
are, yeah.
But
you
it
are a lump.
Felt all like they were marketing it as that type of thing. When it's really not, to me, it's actually quite a heartfelt movie.
It is. It's dealing with like sense of belonging. It's dealing with like, there's a lot of themes in there.
Mm.
But overall, it's really funny.
Yeah. Gentrification.
Yeah, gentrification. I mean, fighting for this tiny fishing town and being like, these fucking people are moving in and raising our fucking
The
summer people, yeah, because it's a holiday town.
Yeah.
So people only come in the summer, you know.
The town is dependent on
exactly.
all those people to like keep it going.
Yeah, remember now.
Yeah. So Jennifer Lawrence's character, she's living in her family home. She lost her mom. Obviously, the home is important to her. And like you said, she comes across is so deadbeat, because we start off when she gets a notice that she's going to be losing this house soon.
Yeah, but also they come to take her car. Yeah.
Cousin comes to
yeah, and they she obviously slept with him. And yeah. Then he's like, yeah, but he's smitten. And so he's like, smitten. Why you hurt me like this? And then she's then a guy comes out.
But she's busy like sweet talking yeah. him into not knowing the car. Like, we had good times, didn't we?
And she's like, that's my cousin.
He's European. So that's like our intro.
Yeah,
to
that sets the scene to her, yeah.
And she's like, but how am I going to do my job? Because she's an Uber driver yeah. and she's also a bartender. And this entire thing also is connected to the fact that price of houses are going up.
Yeah.
She can't afford to actually live where she's living. And what can she do?
Yeah. So she answers an ad.
Which she doesn't think is legit.
Yeah. I mean, this couple offer a car to date their son.
Yeah.
Well, date.
Date. With all its implications.
Yeah.
Apparently sex. Somewhat based on the true stories. That
yeah. So it was an actual Craigslist ad that inspired the script.
Yeah. Not posted by Matthew Broderick.
No. Yeah, producers were talking about it like over dinner, and then they came up with the idea, and then they wrote the script around it. But it was a real fucking ad.
Yeah, parents be parents.
Yeah, my bro. And this light is going to college, so their concern is that he needs to burst his cherry before he goes to college.
Yeah, his father, Matthew Broderick, basing that off of his experience going to college and all of that stuff. So, yeah, they place this ad as loving parents to somehow find a way for their son to get all this experience before he goes to college. And they employ Jennifer Lawrence to help out without the lightly knowing.
And obviously hijinks ensue because she's trying to seduce him. And he's like, he thinks that she's really into him, and he's a sensitive soul.
Yeah, the stuff she does, man. She pitches up where he works, which is a dog shop.
Yeah.
And she's just so into him. To the point
it's like unrealistic.
But to the point where he's like, this woman's trying to kidnap me.
Yeah, he thinks she's trying to kidnap me.
So I really enjoyed the humor of this movie.
Yeah, it's really funny. The dialogue is crass, but not overly. And it's witty at times. And the son he's a dweeb. But he's so good at it.
Yeah, it's very well cast, this movie. Like, Jennifer Lawrence in the lead, the light.
There's a big age gap, though, right?
Yeah, but what is her age supposed to be?
It's like 30. 20,
oh, wait, what does she say? 30, like,
she's like 20, also, 20-ish, 30, 4, 5, yeah, plus 2, whatever. But they said, after hearing criticism about the 15-year age gap, they pointed out that there's a 15-year age gap between her and Bradley Cooper in Silver Linings Playbook, and nobody said anything.
Of course not. Why would
they? Yeah.
The gap's not a problem both ways, Russ.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, same like the wage gap. Not a real thing.
No, Jody dropping bombs in the morning. Shit.
So, Kiki, where's our apology video?
In this empty frame that will actually signify our empty apology.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that's what makes it so funny also, because he has this view about love and relationships that's so innocent and naive.
Yeah.
And she's like,
it's so romanticized.
Yeah. And she's like, life is fucking bullshit. I just want to fuck this guy.
She just needs to tick the boxes. Yeah. Like, she has to have sex with him.
And get the fucking car and fucking save the house. Mm-hmm. That's what I need to do. And then
his idea is like that because of his parents.
Yeah. 100%.
Like, they have what seems like a good relation.
Yeah, but they just want him to have sex.
Yeah, they don't care.
Yeah, they want to protect his heart, but also get his dick wet.
Yeah.
So,
like any loving parent.
True. And the one other thing that I really enjoyed was Natalie Morales and her boyfriend.
That whole relationship, her best friends.
That was cuck funny.
Yeah, like the stuff that they say about her, man. Like,
yeah.
Like, how old does he think you are? Almost like you want to do that.
That relationship was really funny. That dialogue is funny. And they are also like going into, she's pregnant. So Jennifer Lawrence's character is like stuck, and they sort of moving forward regardless type thing. You don't get that early on, but afterwards you come to realize. Yeah.
But also the character development for the two leads, like I keep saying the lighty.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lawrence.
You can call him the lighty.
Jennifer Lawrence and...
You want to call him the white lighty?
Andrew. the character's name is Percy. So, Maddie and Percy's development is actually so much more than what you would think for for R-rated comedy. They actually, like, his motivations for why he's like that. Her motivations for why it's important for her to be in the house and why she's also someone who's clearly not, like, good at relationships.
No.
All of that is actually, they give it, like, time. They ventilate it, you know?
Yeah, they ventilate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of layers to this one. I didn't think that she would be that funny. I know she's funny, especially in interviews and stuff.
Mm.
But to lead a comedy is a whole different ballgame.
And she pulls it off.
Yeah, because she's a bad person, but you still... Because that's the line you have to toe, right? You have to be like, okay, I'm a piece of shit, but I'm a likable piece of shit.
Yes.
And that's not always easy. And I think she does it really well.
And something maybe that, like, for female characters, they don't offer, or female leads, they don't often get funny to toe that line. No, but being like, where you can be,
I'm
like,
joking, obviously, I'm saying
that being a shitty person but likable, that's something that's more afforded to men, like,
yeah.
You know, it's a lovable guy. Like, he's got rough edges. But women don't get to do that.
No.
And she walks that line perfectly in this movie.
It was refreshing because you don't see so many R-rated comedies anymore. And this year, especially, we've been seeing quite a couple.
True. And this one, I mean, Joyride, another favorite of ours from this year. But this movie has been making bank.
Like, is it?
It's record-breaking for an R-rated movie. Recently.
Nice.
There's some type of category that it's really done well. Mm. 45 mil budget and it's made like 90 million. So,
okay.
Like for comedy like this, that budget's probably all like mostly her salary, I imagine. And then a few other things because she's.
No, J-Lo. Yeah. J-Lo fights for money. Yeah. But I think she was a producer on this one.
She is a producer on this one. Yes.
So usually they take a smaller cut as an actor then.
Oh, that's true. And she would make on the back end.
Yeah. But the kid, Percy, he, in the movie, he's going to Princeton, but he actually was due to go to Harvard in real life.
Oh.
And he put that off to film this.
I would do that.
Yeah. I mean, he got a call from Jennifer Lawrence personally.
Yeah. No, I would I'd go with that.
Yeah.
It's kind of like I saw a Glenn Powell interview recently on Rich Eisen's show where he says that he wasn't really going to become an actor.
Mm.
And then he was in a movie with Denzel, The Great Debaters. And Denzel was like, he only had one scene and Denzel told him, you know, I was really good at this. You should think of doing this.
And if Denzel tells you that,
you go with it.
100%.
Then he did Top Gun Maverick right after. This is a pot grief for me, man.
Pot grief for me.
This was such a fun movie.
Oh, wait. Lekker comedy. It's R-rated. It's funny.
But,
it's,
but
got
the
a, it's got some heart.
I'd no, say but the R, I think there's some very hard R scenes here.
Yeah. No, don't say hard R. Because people's going to say they're flinging the N-word out. Not hard R. But they use that R,
I think. They use it. Yeah. But it's much more than a R-rated comedy. This isn't like Hangover and those types of movies.
No. It's a coming of age kind of for him and a growing up for her, right?
Yes. I think that's
good, exactly
that's
what
a
it
good
is.
Summary, yeah.
With sexy.
Yeah.
Pot grief for me, my bro. Jennifer Lawrence fucking powerbomb someone on the beach. Carl.
Carl. Yo. She gives a
Kegi, that scene they
could not stop.
No, but it wasn't even like a sexual thing.
The technique, Abby.
No, it wasn't it wasn't a sexual thing. It was a shock.
Yeah,
because you like you don't expect it,
and she just fucking
she does
goes
not
for
give
it.
A shit. She goes.
Which, look, again, like character-wise, like the scene is that she convinces him to go skinny dipping. But in the water. And this lighty is like, whatever can go wrong will go wrong in my life. Right? That's his whole thing.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, it's going to be
Brown's
fine.
Law.
Murphy Brown's Law.
Yeah.
Big fan. And then they're busy skinny dipping and some lighties come there and take their clothes. And he's like, you see.
So,
I told
now
you.
Pause there because initially you think, okay, classic, take the clothes. They're going to have to walk naked back to the car or whatever.
You know, cover up.
No, okay. She's just, unpause, play.
She's like, fuck this. She gets out naked as the day she's born. And she confronts the group.
She chases them with her reverence. It's like, nah, yes.
And a full out brawl ensues. Yeah. 3-on-1. She gets kicked in the coochie.
She gets kicked in the naked coochie. Right, a toenail coochie may have gone inside.
Right inside.
Oh.
But she does not stop fighting.
Yeah. And what's that move that she does?
That is that's a German problem. Suplex.
German. She fucking German suplexes this motherfucker. Oh, whole shit is out. And she just like, bam. And she's like, got her clothes back.
She's like, you see, I told you, I think she is you. And I think that's where the humor is also so funny, because she is not like a temptress. Like, no. Clearly she is someone who, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
May not into her, but she's like failing at relationships.
Yeah.
But everything she tries with this lighty to like get him to
it's
sleep
awkward.
With her,
you can see
it's so awkward.
It's unnatural for her to seduce someone because she doesn't do that. It comes easily and she gets her sex and she carries on with her life.
She takes him to the house and she starts.
That scene, she did all her own stunts. Totally naked. Took 2 days to shoot.
Yo.
And she was wrestling naked. When they proposed the scene, she was like super excited. She thought it was fucking hilarious. I think the vision, yeah. The vision that they saw, it's not sexy at all.
No.
It's not sexy. You would think, oh, Jennifer Lawrence boobs. No, bruh.
But that's why I say, like, the R rating is for that.
Yeah.
Right? It's not for, like, sex and, like, all of those types of things. That's skull wrestling on the bitch.
That was the best scene in the film for me, I think. Like, it was a laughing eye point. Mm. But overall, she decides that she needs to move on.
Mm.
She needs to grow up and she needs to leave this town and explore different possibilities. And so she does save the house, but then she sells it to her friend.
And we have the obvious movie, thing of the low point where he figures out that she's actually...
Sad music plays.
That's hilarious where he plays off like the parents.
Yeah.
He knows what's coming.
Yeah.
And then all that sad shit happens, but the happy ending of like him figuring out more of who he is, her figuring out what she wants, her friends get the house, and they have a home.
And
for
they don't, there was no way they would end up together, which is great.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and they both like kind of discovered things about themselves and they actually became friends.
Yeah.
Really good friends.
Yeah.
Which is perfect.
Mm. I mean, there is an actual sex scene.
Yeah, no, they do. But again, it's not sexy.
No. Sex scene is also liberal.
Nah, liquor. Yeah. Put grief for me.
Fantastic.
Enjoy. Put it on a Friday night. Liquor loves.
Liquor. Next movie, Ross. Final movie for this episode.
2023.
Huh?
Huh?
Huh? Blue Beetle. This is a DCU production, very specifically because it's the first movie as part of the DCU.
Well, that's kind of afterthought way.
We've been told that, So this one is about Jaime Reyes, who suddenly finds himself in possession of an ancient relic of alien biotechnology called the Scarab.
Mm.
And the Scarab chooses Jaime to be its symbiotic host. He's bestowed with an incredible suit of armor that's capable of extraordinary and unpredictable powers, forever changing his destiny as he becomes the superhero Blue Beetle. This movie is directed by Angel Manuel Soto. Angel.
Not anal. Angel.
I should have researched Jaime's name ahead of time.
Holo.
Okay.
Isn't it Holo?
No, it's Holo.
Holo.
We in South Africa.
Maraduena. Bruna Marquezine. Becky G.
She sounds like a DJ from the 90s. DJ Becky G.
Damian Alcazar, George Lopez, Adriana Barraza, Melissa Escobedo, and Alpedia Carrillo, and then Susan Sarandon is our big bad.
Oh, yeah. Big bad. DC has not had the greatest run of superhero movies.
No.
Especially of late. The Flash, we had fun in the cinema, but overall, it's not that good.
No.
The best thing that they've done to date is probably Suicide Squad, James Gunn's one.
I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
So going into this, I didn't have high hopes.
I didn't. And the marketing also didn't really get me
hyped
for this.
But remember, this one was supposed to come out on Max.
Yes. It was.
And they changed it to a cinematic release afterwards.
Which I think was a good thing.
It didn't do well, though.
No, it didn't. Maybe the best thing I can say, like, right off the bat is that it didn't feel like a DCU movie to me. Like, watching it.
But I think it's got to do with budget. Not only budget, but also stars, right? It's heavily Latin American influence, right? Mm. In terms of the casting, in terms of the culture of the movie.
Director,
and then the actual Easter eggs and references and stuff is so unique to the Latinx community.
Yeah, I hope you've got some stuff, because
I don't. I did read some stuff, but again, it's so specific to them that it won't really mean anything to me.
I see what you
mean. So they reference like Mexican cartoons. They reference Mexican soap opera shows, all these things, or the Latin stuff that I don't have any context for or reference.
But in any case, I do agree with you that it is very much focused on that culture.
Yeah.
And also feels like a more insular movie than some of the stuff we've seen recently from DC.
Yeah.
Because it's not trying to impact on what's coming next.
No.
It felt like it's telling a self-contained story.
It definitely is.
Which was, I enjoyed that.
I enjoyed that as well about it.
Yeah. So, a lot of unknown people in the cast. What did you make
unknown to us.
Yeah, to us. But what did you make of the actor playing Jaime and the rest of the family?
Jaime is nice. He's a good-looking kid. He does the job. Look, the only Blue Beetle comics that I encountered was with him and Booster Gold.
Okay.
So, I didn't read a Blue Beetle comic on its own. Mm. I always read him with Booster Gold, and that relationship is amazing.
I was going to say, I could actually see that now.
Yeah.
Especially if Glenn Powell Booster Gold.
Yeah, I mean, I could see the two of them together, it makes for some good storytelling. Mm. So, Jaime, I didn't have any preconceived notions of what he was supposed to be here.
Mm.
But his performance is mad decent, man. Yeah. I mean, it's like he's a good-looking kid. He does the emotional stuff well. When he gets super angry, I really felt that shit. The sadness, lumming with his family. In terms of his family, he's like the straight man, right?
Yeah, because everyone,
everyone else has quirks.
Yo, can I just say George Lopez?
You can
I was
just say.
So pleasantly surprised by the Abby, George Lopez.
The Abby. The family irritated Abby, by the way.
Oh, they work on my old food.
She's a Vin Diesel family fan, man.
Yes.
This is a bit too authentic.
They just all talk at the same time.
But that is so
unique. That's how family works.
That's
my family's like that.
Her fucking family's like that.
She was getting PTSD.
Her fucking family's like that. And then she's like, they all talk at the same time. I'm like, bitch, that's where you come from.
That's why.
Getting a little close to home, you say.
But, speaking on the family, in the film, Jaime transforms in front of the family.
Yeah.
So that was an actual decision. Because they said, usually the white kid hero hides it from his family all the time. He goes to his room, locks himself. But he said, in a Latin family, that's not possible.
Yeah, they would know.
There's no way that there's no way that a Latin family would ever not find out about it.
No, but that was such a good reason for it. But also, again, distinguishes this from other movies.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's true what they say. Normally your superhero arc is no one knows that you're struggling with this. His struggles are played out in front of his family, blatantly. His uselessness at like making the suit do what he wants. All of that. And he's also positioned as very out of the loop with what's going on with his family, right?
Yeah.
Like we see him.
Well, he was studying. That was also funny. Before we meet Jaime, or before we see him interact with his family, they are discussing the issues that they have, right?
Yeah.
They're going to lose the house. Mm. The father's health is fucked up.
Yeah.
And they're like, don't tell him.
Yeah.
The first time they sit down, the sister fucking tells him everything.
She's like, see?
And the news just keeps coming, man. And like, we're going to lose the house. What? And he's like, daddy had a heart attack. What?
And they're like, don't you think you should have told me? And they're like, no, you were studying. That's how families are. I felt as though they were so authentic about it, and it felt very natural, that family dynamic.
Yeah, this would not have worked with if that wasn't there. Performance-wise, I think everybody was really good.
And this is where I think the trailers were misleading for me, because that element, like the family stuff, even the George Lopez stuff, I was like, don't think I'm going to like this.
Jody,
like the way that it was.
If you're DC, you don't even know how to market your fucking movies anymore.
Like this movie wasn't marketed. Right? Same like Aquaman 2 that's coming out in December.
Yeah, like, the trailer. Everybody's like, where's the fucking trailer? The trailer just dropped like last week or something.
And it wasn't the trailer. It was a teaser for the trailer. So DC doesn't know how to market their shit. This movie had barely any backing. And the way the trailers were cut completely misrepresents what this movie is.
Yeah.
So like for me, the best parts of it, you're not actually showing any of that in the trailers.
Yeah.
Or indicating that it will happen. So I was super pleasantly surprised by how they pulled that off, the family stuff. He's serviceable at this point, but I actually am looking forward to when he plays the character again, like how his character will evolve.
So the Scarab is alien in nature, and it chooses its host. Also in the comics and in this film, there was a previous Blue Beetle, but he doesn't know because the previous one seems like of a later generation, because once they find out that the daughter is the daughter of the Blue Beetle guy. George Lopez is like, I love that guy, man. He was so crazy.
Batman's a fascist.
Yeah, Batman's a fascist. So there's some history for this hero. Oh,
wait, there's that line where they're like looking at the tech. He's like, why does it look like this stuff was designed by a guy with ADHD?
Yeah. I mean, the glove hand thing that the girl puts on, that's a Nintendo power glove.
Is it?
Yes, that she puts
with like Green Lantern tech.
Anyway, the tech. Yeah, I didn't like the tech. But I'll get into that. Anyway, so the Scarab chooses Jaime and he gets these powers that way. It's almost like an Iron Man suit. There's alien AI in there. That's the personality of the Scarab.
Yeah.
And it wants to fuse with Jaime, but they have trouble in the beginning and shit, whatever.
Yeah. Also, the Iron Man reference is really on point because this movie takes liberally from like Iron Man 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Like with the villains and even the villain suits and
but
stuff.
But aren't you tired of like, a hero has to fight evil version of himself?
That murder villain thing is going to just keep happening. Nah, I don't know why, but
that literally started in Iron Man.
Yeah. And they
like happened 20 years ago.
Iron Man, Black Panther did it. Captain America's done it.
Yeah, but at least Captain America,
he did it better.
Yes.
With Winter Soldier. But I'm saying, like, as much as people love Black Panther, it's literally the exact same thing.
Yep.
Their final fight, you can't even see who's
who. No, you can't. It's just only colors.
Purple and yellow.
That's it. And so, it's similar, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's blue and red. I'm tired of this trope. I want him to get creative with villains in superhero movies. There are reasons in comics that they have different villains.
Yeah, that you got the rogues gallery.
Yeah, there's reasons for that. And the reasons are that you don't always want to see the bad version of your hero. You want the hero to engage with a villain that challenges him in a different way. And I feel like they never get that right.
And just think, like, if you now compare Batman, Batman doesn't have villains that are really a bad version of him. Right?
No, his antithesis is supposed to be the Joker, but the Joker is so fucking crazy that you can have different interpretations of him and still, you know,
at
have
his
Batman
core
challenge.
Though, he's fundamentally different and doesn't look like Batman. Whereas what we keep seeing now is the person he ends up fighting is just a bad guy version of him.
Yeah.
Same tech, same Alice. Why did you make up Susan Sarandon as our big bad?
I liked her. She's fine. Nice to see her again. You know, I haven't seen her in a long time. I must actually text her.
Oh, Susie, how she's doing, man.
But yeah, she wasn't hamming it up, but you could tell she was having a bit of fun.
I got her like a Sigourney Weaver vibe from her in this movie.
Well, they do look similar, I guess.
Not really for me, but the
white woman.
Okay. All look the same.
Yeah.
Just the way that she was playing the villain, like, it reminded me of some of her work that she did.
Yeah, I see that.
And, like, there's no way Susan Sarandon can physically match up with him. So she needs
I beg to,
differ. Okay.
I think they didn't give her enough of a chance.
You'd be like, she should have had
100%.
Some hand to hand.
Of course.
Man to man.
Man to man. Man to woman.
Mano a Susano.
I know Susan Sarandon we were talking about now, but also fuck that. I like the Spanish. So much Spanish and so much puto, puta, cabrón.
But it didn't feel
no, it's
forced,
supernatural.
You know?
Supernatural. I mean, not supernatural.
Yeah.
Supernatural.
It's not like those movies where they're like, hey, look at us, we're Latino.
Yeah. We're Latino. Orale, vato. Yeah. You know?
R.I.P. Eddie Guerrero.
Eddie Guerrero, as my one colleague used to say.
Oh. That's not problematic at all.
No, it was just her pronunciation of it.
Again, none of that felt forced. Yeah, it no. felt like that's how they talk. And it's authentic, man.
Yeah, it was authentic. Really. It is.
Like all these movies pushing the family narrative lately. And this one.
But again, you can't fake that, right? Like, if you fake it, then your movie at its core crumbles. It has
vehicle
to.
Vehicle identification number. Yeah. Begs to differ.
They have such a weird fucking concept. I mean, the Fast and Furious. They have such a weird concept of family. It's so.
The people in this room.
It's so paper thin at this point. Their concept of family.
The people in this room. Whoever's got the corona has got the family.
You can't be part of the family if you don't drink corona. He doesn't even use like lemon slices.
No, straight up. That's how a real street racer.
Straight to that giant head of his. Anyway, so if your family is inauthentic, your movie doesn't work.
Doesn't.
That definitely works.
And they keep that core running throughout.
Mm. But again, if you're someone like Abby who gets sort of irritated by that, then it might become irritating.
That's
for you.
True.
If you have a more cynical view of life.
That's rude, eh? Don't bring my stuff out on the podcast.
Says butter. Says butter. Hey, you scared me.
So, because it's not always for everyone.
That's true.
You and I,
they lean into it every.
Yeah, we give a lot of leeway. We're quite naive. And
maybe what I would say is that Jaime's character development is actually kind of stymied in a way because there's that focus on.
Yeah,
everything.
I mean, the family is a huge focus. There's also logical leaps in terms of how they can somehow operate this tech.
No, I...
And George Lopez, who's used to working
Deus
on
ex machina, my bro. That bras.
Pilot a giant bug and stuff. Like,
can hack into a computer system.
Yeah, fuck. Like, I'm like, okay, this
I
is
feel like
a throw, ridiculous.
Like, one or two throwaway lines could have even contextualized that at least. Like... You know, he has a background in tech.
Yeah, like he studied it or whatever. Or he's like
and he was a dropout.
Or he's like whatever. A doomsday prepper type thing. So he has like these cobbled together things. But it's just like...
But we leap from works on his own truck to...
Listen, when that scene happened when they were in the house and the chick came with him because now he's turned into this little situation. And they were sitting around the table and having this conversation. And then George Lopez is like, I'm going to go work on something.
Yeah.
That's when I fucking turned around and I went to sleep.
Yeah, because he just had that device.
Yeah, look, they imply that he is obviously like weary of the government.
He's into conspiracy theories.
Yes, he's into conspiracy theories and stuff. Yeah. But that is that's a really big leap for him to have a device
like,
that can
bypass
a security system.
Almost like a specific EMP that doesn't affect anything else. Just that one thing that you need.
Like, I mean, the military's been working on that for years and they haven't gotten it right. So.
No. Have they asked George what he's doing?
No, they haven't. Orale.
You see.
So... Yeah, logic leaps. It did irritate me.
I've seen worse in DC.
I have seen worse.
I feel like because the good stuff works so well for me, I'm forgiving of the stuff like the logic leaps that just don't make sense. And these characters that also aren't fantastic, the daughter of the former Blue Beetle, the love interest, she doesn't do much for me in this movie, really.
Yeah.
Like, she's not a well-developed character at all.
Yeah, but she's not supposed to be, right? Her role is to obviously be the company person and then also be an outsider looking into this family dynamic.
Yeah.
And that's why I did believe like she got so close because she never got what they have, you know?
Yeah.
Because she defends them and she's like, they know more about family than you will ever know.
Yeah.
When she's talking to Susan Sarandon. So I get that. And she was serviceable at best.
Yeah.
But it's not her fault. Mm. But I did believe her falling for Jaime. But I think if his family wasn't involved, she would not have fallen for him.
She's falling for the whole package.
Yeah,
basically.
Exactly.
That one line, you know, when Jaime goes to her office, because she's must now offered him the draw, like, come see me thing at the office. And that woman, like, she knows just enough so that she can be perfectly racist in that scene. Where he's like, my name is Jaime. And she's like Jamie.
Jamie.
I'm like, she knows how to spell his name. She hears him pronouncing it.
Irking you, eh? Irks you.
Like, you know enough
you
to know
bitch.
Better.
Look at where you live. Like that city that they live in is based on Miami, which is like a 70% like Latino Cuban community. Yeah. So like, bitch, you live in that place.
What did you think of that wall design?
After like doing the research, I understand like why they did it. Mm. It's a lot of neon though.
And what I wonder now is if this is supposed to tie into the rest of DC, right? That means that world that they created is a template for the other cities and stuff that have to be showcased.
Yeah, you have your Metropolis, which is sunny and amazing. And then you have Gotham, which is rainy and terrible.
And there's never daylight in Gotham.
Yeah, and this one is like, bright and culturally rich and shit. Mm. So they do have, but the original Jaime is from El Paso.
Mm. Okay.
So it's an existing place, and they created this for the movie.
Okay. I didn't know anything about this character. Like, this is probably the least I knew about the superhero character going into a movie, which to a degree was actually refreshing for me because I thought, let me not go and do all this research ahead of time.
Okay, this could be budget issues, but I feel like when you give a character or a superhero a chance to create anything with his imagination.
That was one of my frustrations. Not, it's not just constructs, eh? It's not like
Green Lantern. This is like physical things that appear. So
I can make anything you want.
Anything.
I'll give you two swords and I'll give you one big sword.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was a reference to Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I get it. But
so the little bit of fan service there. But again, just me alone being exposed to so much pop culture and references and like video games and stuff like, the possibilities are fucking endless,
you know,
bro.
Do you know what it is, maybe?
What?
You know when someone tells you, or don't think of you, think of someone who's maybe not so tech savvy, and you tell them, I can play any song for you that you want in the world, the best song, and you put them on the spot to choose it.
Mm.
People blank.
Yeah.
They're like, because it's overwhelming.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can literally, maybe this is, if I have to now try and explain, maybe it's that thing of like, I can make anything for you.
Mm.
Like literally anything. And then you have to actually figure out, what do I want this thing to make?
But again, I mean, you can make a sword with guns in it, you know? And there's interesting ways you can you can take like simple bases for things and just like fucking mesh them together. So that giant sword.
And make it reflective of like a young person's.
Could have been like spin it around and you know, something cool. But again,
but there's budgetary.
I mean, the coolest scene was probably where he fights in the hallway once the Scarab reboots.
Reboots, yes. Yes.
Where he's like, let's go. Yeah. And he's making hammers and shit. Mm. Like, that was dope.
Mm.
Still very stunted, but
a very basic design.
Yeah. But again, it could be in budget. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. I think that I did have the same thing. It's like if you watched Ryan Reynolds' Green Lantern movie.
Yeah.
Like, why? Out of all the things that you can imagine in the entire universe, why are you imagining that?
Digital effects, it's super complicated. Mm. And when you have to make things appear out of nothing, there's a lot of times where you have to hide things. I mean, they, and a lot of ways they hide things is using blue light.
Mm.
And that type of stuff. But for me, the Scarab is organic in nature, not, you know, technology.
Yeah.
Like, it's more organic for me, especially the way it appears and stuff. Mm. So then make those creations seem more organic. Mm. Like, you can, there's effects. I mean, they did it with Venom. There's ways you can make it feel more grounded. Mm. This time it was just like these things appear. Even that brass suit, the first one even, when he fights for the first time.
These
things just appear out of fucking nowhere. And it's like, okay, this is a leap.
Yeah,
I would have liked a little more groundedness in the way that those things generate.
Not a lot of time left.
No. In terms of DC films, this is a port grief.
Yeah, I wouldn't even give that disclaimer. It's a port grief. It's a liquor movie. No, even with the issues, is enough good for me that I could say, no, it's fine. So for me, it's a port grief.
Yeah.
It definitely doesn't feel like a DC movie to me. It
felt
like a separate
thing.
To
its benefit.
Yes.
Jaime's father dies.
Yo, so sad.
So bad.
Susan Sarandon's into child soldiers.
Hey. She's, you know, natural progression.
Yeah.
Child soldier warlord to CEO.
Yeah. Yo, that's a little smack of emotion there with the villain.
That
thing.
Was so brilliant.
Like,
that was one of the highlights.
Out of left field. Like, I don't think I've ever seen that in a movie where they can make me relate to a villain. Was in the space of just like one little snippet, I actually understand this man now. And
definitely, they show his entire past and how he came to be this way and be where he is.
Mm.
And it's like, yeah, I wouldn't fucking kill him either.
True.
Jeez.
And then he goes and just like
okay, I'm going to fucking kill everything. But the director didn't want the father to die initially.
Mm.
But this is the one time, possibly the only time. No, that does happen from time to time, but it's rare. The studio pushed for an emotional death in the film.
It was needed.
And I loved that when the father dies, the grandmother steps in and says, we can't mourn now. We have to
save Aimee.
Yes. And the payoff at the end, once they're all safe and everything's said and done, and then she says, now we can cry.
Yeah.
And they all cry together.
Mm. Yeah. No, that was brilliant. Really. And the choice of the father was good as well, because it might have been easy to go.
Look, he was on his way out.
You know, how many heart chambers did he have left, Russ? He can only have so many heart attacks. So it was a good choice. But he also, when he dies, it's like still taking care of his family.
Yeah.
That all, we will be okay.
Yeah, I like that too. He's like, yeah, we've made it this far. We'll be okay. Don't worry about it.
And again, George Lopez. Like, I wasn't a fan of his show. I'm not really a fan
Abby
of his
stand-up. Abby was a huge fan.
Like, I wasn't. And he won me over so much in this role, because he wasn't too much, but he also brought that emotional element, the story of how the father went to go fetch him also and brought him in.
Yeah, there's really, like, there's some quiet moments that are cool when they're revealing things about their past and stuff. Even the daughter, also, you know, and I mean, like, so before the kiss and stuff, they're talking about, like, something. Oh, God. Like, that was, like, cool. The quiet moments were good. Yeah.
They really were.
And then that scene with the grandmother shooting, like, the minigun, that was kakwai. Because she's like, you imperialist. And then you know, like, yo, that she's seen some shit.
Yeah, something like, grandma's got the revolutionary background. I want that back story.
Everybody kind of gets a moment. The relationship with the sister, the mother, before Jaime goes back inside, she tells him,
use that rage.
Aware.
And then when he does,
you feel it. That's what that was the height of his performance. Like, to be like, when he thinks his uncle's also dead,
yeah,
he fucking loses it, my bro. And for the scarab to stop him.
And then we have that payoff where, like, he tells the scarab in the beginning all time, like, we don't kill.
Yeah.
And then the scarab stops him from killing.
Because now that's after they sink. So the scarab, like the scarab did with Kamara. What was the fuck with, he had the terrible name.
Ted Carr.
No, the villain.
The main villain.
Yeah, his character name was like, every time they said it, it was so fucking clunky. Karamajari. Karatheho. Carfaxian or something.
Carapax.
Carapax. Ugh.
But they said it weird.
I don't know why it grated me. But anyway, so the scarab got insight into him. So I would imagine that the scarab got insight into Jaime and knew at his core he wasn't the killer. Yes. So that payoff was so fucking good as well. Overall, if you're just looking for a superhero fight, it's decent. It's not so great.
Yeah.
There's budgetary restrictions. The action is decent. I like the fight choreography. The Beetle can do some dope shit. But again, I think they were limited.
They were. And they, I'd say some of it's derivative. Lots of liberal taking from the Iron Man series and so on. But overall, a good time.
If in the future this is the low point of the bar, then that's I would be happy with that. Yeah.
Very much.
No shout-outs, right?
Nah.
Okay.
Nah.
Yeah, fuck it.
Fuck it.
If someone went to find us, Jody, how would they do that?
They could go on to TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Bicycle Brasser Podcast, and they can write to us, bicyclebrasser@gmail.com.
Nice. Remember, stay safe and be good for Knox.
And Charlie.